but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, the networks and the conferences releasing some of the kickoff times, including Oregon's game against Penn State, September 27th. That game's going to be a whiteout in Penn State. That'll be a big one for Oregon. Obviously, the whiteout game last year was Washington at Penn State. Here to talk about that and some other things, Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football Podcast. We'll take some phone calls as well. Tony in Vancouver's holding. Sean in Sandy's holding. Got some lines open at 503-417-7575. Maybe we can do this in conjunction with Spencer's interview as well. But Spencer joining us. What did you think when you saw Oregon-Penn State whiteout game?
I think that it's a break for Oregon, about the only one you could possibly find for that scheduling matchup. You know, Oregon's schedule for the second straight year works out in about as favorable a fashion as you can ask. But the one, you know, kind of outlier game for that on this schedule, John, is the Penn State game. And it's not just because you have to go all the way across the country. It's not just because you're going to play a really good team. It's not just because that really good team is going to be coming off of a bye week. But it's all of those things really put together that makes it really, really tough on paper. And it should be an awesome game. But if that was going to be a big noon kickoff, boy, I might have advised some Oregon fans to just not even tune in, because that's just such a brutal spot to be in there. And I know Oregon pulled that off against Ohio State years ago in 2021. I think that was a pretty sizable upset, and that's how everybody remembers it, and they should. But you know, I think that if Oregon is able to not let Penn State get rolling early, they can win that game. I definitely don't expect them to, but that would be an expectation shifter, I think. If Oregon goes across the country where Penn State's at home off a bye and they've got a more experienced roster and a more experienced quarterback, if Oregon still finds a way to win that football game, I think we should all look at the Ducks with a little bit of a different edge than even we will going into the season. But it's way better for Oregon that this is going to be a 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific kick than a big noon kickoff at 9 a.m. Pacific time like they've got week three. It is against Northwestern.
Looks like the Ohio State-Washington game will probably be the big noon game that leads into that. Spencer, I'm looking at the board, and most of the sports books have Oregon's win total around 10.5 wins. One of the highest in the country. How do you see that breaking down? Do you see any value there?
I don't see any major value. I, you know, in solid pencil, not Sharpie or pen, I've got Penn State in there as a pretty clear loss. And, you know, before you look at the schedule, John, I think Oregon going 10-2 this year is just such a natural, normal sort of progression when you look at the season that they had last year, barely beating Ohio State, holding on against Wisconsin on the road. And you're losing so much. You've got a new quarterback who hasn't actually proven he's great in college football yet or even good. The three games he started at UCLA a few years ago, he threw 6 interceptions, and 3 of them were returned for a touchdown. So I wonder about all of those things, but then I look at the schedule and I just keep coming back to the same thing, John, which is, who does Oregon have a worse roster than? Doesn't automatically mean you're going to win or that it will be easy, but you just go through and say, well, you know, Indiana or USC could get them. At Autzen Stadium, though, boy, hard to pick that. Well, Iowa could get it. Are we really going to pick Iowa? I'd watch for the Washington game. You know, I think everyone's familiar at this point with Dan Lanning's history against the Huskies. I know it was Kalen DeBoer previously, but that's going to be a road rivalry game in November in a hostile environment against a much improved Washington team. So I'd look for the Washington or Iowa games as potential spots where the Ducks could trip up, but I haven't looked at that win total. I think that that spread is right for them because I don't look at that and immediately go one way or the other. I think Oregon is probably a 10, or they should be a 10 or 11 win team this year.
So that's right in there. Ohio State and Penn State also both at 10.5. I know you're big on Penn State. Do you think Penn State is an 11 or possibly 12-win team with their schedule?
Absolutely. I think they should only need a split of Oregon and Ohio State. I think it is entirely possible they win both. I know that they have to go to Columbus, but, you know, Oregon's coming all the way across the country. The whiteout atmosphere is a tough situation for a road team to win a football game. Dante Moore will be starting his fifth game, I believe it is, as Oregon's quarterback. So that's a tough spot to be in. But, you know, Ohio State will be really good. I've seen them lose at the Horseshoe before in big spots. Oregon in 2021, Michigan just last year. And, you know, it's a great environment. They just haven't proven themselves to be unbeatable on that field the way that you might think. So, of course, their home record is great, but you know, they don't have one of the longest home winning streaks or anything. They're 0-1 in their last stretch at the Horseshoe. So I think Penn State is pretty square. Like, of those three teams, John, I feel the best putting my own money on Penn State over 10.5 before Oregon and Ohio State, just because there's so much more that you know with that Penn State team. You don't know if Dante Moore is going to be great. You can speculate, and you can see how he could be great. He's got all the tools, and he's got a great situation and a really good coaching staff that's had three outstanding seasons of quarterbacks so far, but this is the first time they're working with a young guy. And you look at Ohio State and Ryan Day's track record with quarterbacks, really good. Is Julian staying that guy? Because we know Ryan Day is good, but sometimes guys are just not it, or they just can't quite figure it out for whatever reason. So I think that Penn State has the most value on going over 10.5. I think Oregon and Ohio State could come down to a couple of field goals.
I want to throw a couple other big 10 teams at you, and then we'll talk a little bit stuff outside of the win totals. But Michigan's at 8.5. Washington's at 7.5. And I keep thinking, like, you know, we're counting these programs out, but I think both those teams are good enough to maybe rise up and beat one of those teams that's supposed to win 10 or 11 or 12 games. I just don't know if I would bank yet on the sustainability or consistency with those two teams.
I think Michigan is a year away from being great again. I think they were a good team last year. Let's not get it twisted. People, you know, think about what Michigan was and probably just think of how bad their quarterback room was, and I get that. They were an 8-5 football team. There's nothing wrong with that. You're not great, but you're 8-5 with wins over Ohio State and Alabama. That would be getting a lot of coaches in a lot of different coaching situations across the country. That'd be getting them an extension from their athletic director if they did that and won those two games to end the year. So I think Michigan is good. I wonder about their defense, not whether or not it's going to be good, but is it as good as last year? I mean, you lose three NFL defensive linemen. I got the same question about Oregon. Can, you know, they really be at the same level that they were last year up front when you lose Derek Harmon, Jamari Caldwell, and Jordan Birch? Tough spot to be in. Well, Michigan similarly lost Mason Graham, Josiah Stewart, and Kenneth Grant. Those were all early round draft picks. So I just said they lose Will Johnson, the corner. They didn't have him for much of last year. Again, I think Michigan's good. I think they're great in 2026 once their five-star number one quarterback, Bryce Underwood's got a year of experience under his belt. Washington is really interesting because They have a couple of pieces I really like. Damon Williams, I think, can be great. I like Jed Fish as a head coach and a play caller. He's proven his value, I think, since he left Arizona and the mess that they became under Brent Brennan last year, and Noah Fifita regressed majorly. And I like Fish a lot. Denzel Boston's a really good receiver. Jonah Coleman's a really good running back. My question again for Washington, though, is what did them in against Oregon last year. What are they going to be in the trenches? Like, they gave up 10 sacks at Austin Stadium. Cut that number in half, and you still have allowed 5 sacks on a really mobile quarterback. He was young last year, but I still want it. They brought in a couple pieces. A tackle from Kansas State, I think, is probably the best new addition they've got on the offensive line. But is their defensive line there to be disruptive? Because last year they got pushed around a pretty good amount. You think of what Caleb Johnson of Iowa did to him last year in Iowa City at Kinnick Stadium. So I wonder about that, and I think that'll ultimately define whether they can take that next step forward and be an 8-9 win team, because I think they have a couple of those pieces that are getting ready. I just don't know if they're fully ready yet.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football podcast and contributor at 750thegame.com, is with us. The bigger picture in college football, you've got Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti, the commissioners of the SEC and the Big Ten, talking about automatic berths. Today, Brett Yormark of the Big 12 fired back a little bit, says, you know, his constituents don't want an invitational tournament. They want a real tournament. The greater good of college football is up in the air. Here's Yormark's comments.
Well, I like 16. More access is better for the Big 12 for sure. But I'm also about fairness. And there's been a lot of conversations out there about AQs. And, you know, from where I sit, and I know I speak on behalf of our coaches and our ADs, we want to earn it on the field. And I'm adamant about that. And I think a 5+11 format does that. It's fair. It's what our fans want. And they don't want an invitational. They want a true playoff system. And we have that right now. I thought last year going to a 12-team format was fantastic. It played out exactly how people had hoped. It was very dramatic. It created a lot of interest. Going to 16, I think, does more of that. But I think we need to put these multiple AQs, take it out of the conversation and focus on what's right for college football. And I think 5+11 does that. And that's our preference.
5+11 does it. That's our preference. He said what's good for college football. I like that Yormark's trying to put a foot in the ground, because if not, no one's going to stop those two conferences, Spencer.
Well, yeah. Where does it stop, though, Brett? The 12-team playoff was great. I love 16. So are we going to a 64-team playoff? What's the number? Where's the upper limit? I've said for a while, once they started expanding the playoff, they're not going to stop until it gets at least to a 24-team playoff, because somebody, somewhere, as the late Mike Leach did many years ago, is going to raise the point that the FCS college football playoffs are 24 teams. And so they're going to look at that and eventually say, oh, yeah, hey, they've been doing this for a long time. And they're just going to bury the regular season vitality and importance into the ground until it is all about the playoff. We're already taking some steps towards getting there. I think the 12-team playoff sucks. I think the 16-team playoff is worse. But if those are my only options, which they are on an annual basis, then, yeah, 5+11 is better than the 4-4-2-2-1 or 4-4. I don't know. It just sounds like a bunch of half-court traps in basketball with too many players on the
court. Soccer formation, man. It's a soccer formation. I don't like it either. But okay, so if you and I are putting together the best tournament, what's that look like for you?
I mean, I'd go back to the BCS before I went to a 16-team playoff. Like, I would do that in a millisecond. But I think a playoff is perfectly fine in college football and makes plenty of sense. The first year I ever would have supported expansion was when SEC runner-up Georgia, 2 years ago when Washington made the title game. That year Georgia got left out, and they went 12-0 in the SEC but lost to Bama in the SEC title game. That was the first and only year, John, the only year in the entire existence of the 14 playoff. That was the only year where I felt okay, a team had a pretty incredible season, got left out, and I feel like they could have won the national championship if given the chance. I never felt that before. The teams that were sitting at 5-6, there was a year, I forget which one it was, where there was like a TCU and Baylor debate. Yep. About which of these teams should get in, and this team beat that one head-to-head. I'm going, you guys are just playing for the, like, I've watched you for an entire season. You're playing for the right to get your butts kicked by Alabama. Let's just stop with this nonsense. So I've never felt that the playoff needed to expand to find the correct national champion until a couple of years ago. But, you know, even last year, John, like, did I need 12 teams in the playoff to know who was good enough to win it all? No. No, I really did not. What we forget in the offseason when we have these discussions every year is when you watch 13 games worth, you know, 12 regular season and conference championship weekend, when you watch that much college football, you have a lot of information and you know who is actually good enough, right? Based on the criteria, sure, Tennessee was absolutely worthy of getting into the playoff with a 10-2 record. The win over Bama was huge. Like, okay. That's fine. They were kind of a dark horse, but I watched Nico play quarterback and thought, nah, he's 1 year away at least from being able to lead them to a national championship game. Like, this is not going to get them to that point. But, hey, they were in the playoffs. So this idea that, you know, it's just more access, that makes it better. It doesn't. It makes the regular season worse, and then we get a bunch of playoff games that aren't, you know, super competitive, which has always been the case anyway. But back to the original question about what a good format would be. Just give me a 16 playoff, two teams, the top two seeds get a bye, and the result of that bye, and I hope this comes about someday in the playoff era, John, the ultimate reward for having a good regular season should be a home playoff game.
Yes.
There is no greater reward in all of sports than a home playoff game. And that Oregon last year would have been better off, not just from a matchup standpoint, but from a revenue standpoint, because they would have gotten another game at their stadium, would have been better for their fans, all that stuff. The reward should be that the teams that earn a bye because they had the best regular season or won a conference championship or wherever they're ranked, they should get a home playoff game. And the first round games should be neutral site, and then you should have to go to the home playoff site. That's just my take on it.
Spencer McLaughlin, I appreciate you. Locked On College Football Podcast. Great stuff from Spencer. I have time for a quick phone call here. Let's go to Tony in Vancouver. Tony, you've been holding. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Adam Silver can never be the commissioner of the NFL, ever. He's too passive. He's too liberal. The owners run the NFL, not Roger Goodell. I mean, it's a privilege to play in the NFL, not a right.
Yeah, but I kind of think Adam Silver's channeling what his league owners want him to be about and what they want him to support. And the commissioners of these sports, I do wonder if you arm, you know, Rod Manfred with the assets of the NFL and the momentum of the NFL, how much different is it? Sean's in Sandy. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, John. I heard you ask if people were listening. We love your passion for the region and the Pacific Athletic Conference, brother. And we really do.
Yeah.
You're outspoken, and people believe you fight for what you believe in. And we respect that.
Thank you.
And you know what we'd like to see is, we'd like to see you, you talked about how you don't like politics, but I believe that, like, sports politics is your thing. That's what you actually talk about a lot. And if you ever did something like that, people would get behind you. You might be surprised on who might do that. Look who's the president right now. Nobody thought nobody would get behind that guy. But see, you're a whole different person. Your heart's in it. And people totally get behind that, and we feel that. And if you go in there and you actually do, and I feel like you talk about what you say you're going to do, like as far as like spreading out the wealth and everything else. I'd love to see you get any kind of like local politics or hopefully.
No shot, man. No interest, no shot. I've got a better job. Let's be honest. But I do think it's important that we have people, callers, listeners, media personalities. I think it's important that we have people who share ideas. I think the worst thing ever is when we get too much into the vocal minority and what they would like us to be about and like us to do, and that we don't have enough good ideas out there. Keep it coming. Coming up, our big splash, Bill Moose, former Oregon and Washington State AD, will be with us at 4 o'clock. In the 5 o'clock hour, St. Mary's baseball coach will be with us, Eric Valenzuela. Leave it here.